they're so worried about trying to figure out, am I saying the right syllable at the right time, that it impedes whether or not they're even able to play the rhythm for what it actually is written out to be.
Counting works for helping students understand mentally. It's not really like a feeling thing or a musicality thing. It's purely academic, it's intellectual, but it's to help students understand, where are we in this music, in this measure, in this piece?
Welcome to the Piano Sensei Way. I'm your host, Clinton Pratt, and I am here to help you master the art of running a successful piano teaching studio. We are live on YouTube, so maybe we'll have one live viewer. I know, I'm very optimistic. Okay, but we have a panel of some other teachers, which is very exciting. Okay, let's bring on everybody, and then I'll have everybody introduce themselves, and I will ask you to tell me your name and your location and what you teach. Okay, let's start with Jordan.
Hi, my name's Jordan. I teach private one-on-one lessons out of my studio in South Denver.
Excellent. And Val.
Hi, everybody. I'm Val Muller. I am in North Carolina, and I also teach privately.
Excellent. And Brian.
Hi, I'm Brian Lauder. I teach out of Rockville, Maryland. I've been teaching for probably 19 years now. Yeah.
Okay, great. And Harrison.
Hi, everyone. My name's Harrison, and I'm a private jazz piano instructor in Portland, Oregon. I'm also just kind of a general freelancer.
Okay, great. So let's get into the topic, to count or not to count. That is the question. So we might need to like define what that is or whatever, but just to start it off, let's go around and tell us if you insist on having students count out loud. And this is based on this discussion that happened in Piano Teacher Central, where somebody asked that exact question. And then there was like 180 comments, very lively, shall we say. So do you, and this is just very short, and then we can get into more discussion later, but basically just yes or no, or maybe just a short answer or one sentence. Do you insist on having students count out loud? Jordan.
I definitely do not, but I put big asterisks on that statement that we'll get into. So
yes. Okay. And Val.
Okay.
Do you insist on counting out loud?
Yes. It's not negotiable in my studio.
Great. I love the definitiveness. Okay. Mike, you just joined us. Tell us where you are and what you teach.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm in South Carolina, so hi, Val, just below you. I'm an assistant professor of theory and piano at Limestone University. So, and I also teach privately. So I have college piano students and young students, and I teach aural skills. And so that really influences how I teach rhythm and reading rhythm. And so I do a little bit of a mix, sometimes counting. I find most of my students come in, they've learned in band and band classes and whatnot to count rhythms with numbers. And then for a lot of them, I've introduced them to like Gordon rhythm syllables, you know, do-day and do-da-dee and all of that. And that's okay. That's been a new thing, but I really believe in easy to speak syllables for doing rhythms. And I feel like internalizing rhythm is really important to be able to speak and sing a rhythm before performing. So,
yeah, sorry to cut you off. One sentence. Okay.
I missed that.
Okay. Brian, do you insist on counting out loud?
Insist is a hard word, but yes, it's very featured in my studio. We count out loud quite a bit.
Okay. Thank you. And Harrison.
I say you count out loud, you know, in terms of like learning something when you need to. So if you can't play a passage rhythmically accurately, then count out one end, two end, three end, four end. But I don't think that generally you need to be doing that the whole time you're playing something.
Okay, yes, thanks for that. And anybody watching on YouTube, if you chat in YouTube, we will actually see the comments in our platform, which is really cool. And I don't have to switch over to YouTube. So just feel free. I see Tennessee Music Academy said, excited for this. And I think that's Michael, my friend Michael Ritchie, who I've had on the show. So thank you for listening. And please put your thoughts in there as well. Okay, so majority was kind of yeses. I'll give my opinion. I'm like a biased moderator. Okay, so it's like, I know it's horrible because that's like not fair, but that's okay because I want everybody to have their thoughts. No, I do not insist on counting. In fact, I rarely have the students count out loud, and I think it can be detrimental. So that's my opinion. But maybe let's talk about what do we mean by counting? I mean, well, I assume people mean one, two, three, four. Although Mike mentioned like syllables, due day, all this other stuff. So is that considered counting? Like, what do we mean by counting? Who wants to go first? You can just, okay, Harrison.
To me, counting is just parsing out what are the, rhythmic areas of a phrase. Let's say that.
Okay, so is it numbers?
It can be. That's generally how we see it, right? But like, we have a phrase that starts here and then ends here. I have to turn my camera because I don't have a good grip. And in between A and B, you have so much space that the phrase elapses. And we have notes that occur at various points in that space. And mm-hmm. we have names for those, and they're called beats. And we number them, right? And so we have beats 1, 2, 3, 4 generally, and then we have spaces in between those.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Anybody else? What do we mean by counting? Is it numbers? Is it just numbers?
So it's not just numbers. I think it's more of a language-based processing of music as opposed to other types of thinking or other types of movement. I think it's also about a hierarchical structure, like teaching people which beats are more important and why they are, and categorizing certain places of rhythm in certain levels of meter or groove, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, so for example, watermelon, watermelon, apple, pear, could be considered counting if like I'm trying to do the rhythm of like 16ths and 8ths and whatever, right? But you're saying, but then that doesn't show like which one was the downbeat or whatever, right? So
I find early in my teaching, I tried the word thing. I found that was actually very difficult because people say watermelon differently than what you might, or they'll go home and they won't be able to remember how you said it. And so they'll come back with a different rhythm. And so in general, counting partially is about, in rhythm, I consider like three different things. There's the three levels. There's the order of things, and then there's the pulse of things, which are two completely different thought processes. And then the third thing is really the hierarchy of basically dynamic contrast, like which notes are louder versus softer and why are they and whatnot. Like syncopation, for example, will change the dynamic capability of a note. So like in general, counting with words, while there's a language component that you might relate to in the lesson, it's difficult to process down the road, or people say it differently. The word counts, especially when you get with metronomes and stuff, are a lot more consistent, I find.
Okay. Jordan, is counting numbers? What is counting?
So I was gonna say, because I feel like we're kind of beating around some similar bushes here. And one of the things I think that's important to say is that like I feel like most of us would agree that like in general, right, you count your macro beats, your large ones with numbers. I think we all do that. But where a lot of counting starts to diverge is when we start talking about like subdivisions, right? I have never realized until like I started teaching and started exploring a variety of method books and different systems out there, like how many different ways there are to do it.
And I've tried quite a few of them. And I think that, like, one, I've never been a big fan of, like, reading a grocery list, because it requires students to really remember, like, which fruit or vegetable am I supposed to say in this context? And that becomes difficult just to remember, because it's like learning a whole language, you know, and memorizing a grocery list at, like, specific moments hasn't ever been super successful for me. I will say, though, that, like, in terms of other things, I love the little, you put a little strip up on the screen of, like, an example of, like, how to count some of these rhythms. And it had the what was it? Oh, there it is. Yep. Ti-te-ta. I hate it. I barfed a little bit when I saw that. Like, it's three those kinds of things where I'm just like, I cannot do something like that, because there's so many T's involved. And so when I was in college, I did a lot of vocal stuff in college, a lot of vocal jazz. And so we did a lot of, like, scatting and stuff that was written into the music, but it really started to kind of create this intuitive system for us where we weren't, like, specifically trying to, like, count out the rhythms, but, like, certain rhythms make more sense to use certain syllables on, rather than, like, you know, say, like, weaker syllables and weaker parts of a rhythm. And it really kind of helped me realize that it doesn't really matter, like, what specific language you put in there, as long as your subdivision is, like, something that is simple to say, something that's simple to speak, and something that you don't have to think super heavily about. Because I think that it's when, like, the language gets in the way that really starts to inhibit the process, the learning process.
Yeah, okay. So I left that on the screen. I purposely chose that little image because it was kind of annoying to me too. So now,
agreed.
Most,
I share the hatred.
I bet most of you here, and maybe everybody watching, you could probably speak that rhythm accurately and say those syllables. Let me see. One, te, three, ti, te, ti, three, ti, te, ta, four. One, te, ta, two, ta, three, ti, te, four, ti. Okay. Yeah. So I can do it. But does it help me? I don't think so, because I can do the rhythm without saying anything. I can play the rhythm. I can tap the rhythm, right? So, yeah, if anybody else wants to weigh in on, like, what is counting? Otherwise, that kind of leads me to my next thing, which is, why are we counting, or what problem is that solving?
We're getting in how to count more than why we should count.
Well, so, yes, and that's why, really, I was trying to define first, what do we mean by counting?
Counting is rhythm, which to me, I was taught, and I like to teach my students that rhythm is the most important part of music, right? We have melody, harmony, and rhythm. And rhythm, we can't have music without rhythm. And when that one gets a little bit off the charts, it's not quality music, which is what we like, which is what we prefer. Now, I looked into different ways of counting, and I never been successful as much as just keeping it simple with the numbers in so many various ways that I'm sure we're going to dig in later. I don't believe on the words. I have an accent, so that one is it's challenging. And I teach 3 years old, and they're brutal, so they pick up on anything. And then the Tita, the Gordon methods, all those other, why not keeping it simple with the numbers? Because it's something that they do. It's something that we use continuously throughout the life, right? And why not?
Right. Okay. So you mean numbers, but then what do you do for, like, you have 4/16 notes on beat one?
Manienda.
Okay, right. So that's kind of the traditional thing. But just to clarify.
Very traditional. Yeah. One, yeah. Two, three for the quarter, one and for the eighth, one and for the 16th. And I feel like after that, that's kind of, you don't have to count anymore. So.
Right. Yeah. I just wanted to specify that. But just to clarify, E and aren't numbers. So when we say counting, we mean basically numbers that correspond to the beat, which corresponds to the meter, and then some other syllables to help subdivide.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so yes. Maybe everybody agrees on that. Okay, let's jump over to Mike.
Yeah, I think what's at the heart of it is feeling a pulse. I can't remember who said that earlier, the idea of pulse and macro beats. And I think that's what is at the heart of understanding rhythm. It's this archaic, weird grouping of symbols that don't mean anything until you really dig into all of it, but it's just symbols that represent things happening over time, right? So we have to feel some sort of pulse, and we need some sort of system for kind of that. So, you know, I think that the Gordon rhythm syllables are nice because they're easy to say. You know, do day is easy to say, do da di is easy to say, do ta de ta di ta, do ta de ta di ta is really easy to do a subdivision in 6/8 meter. The one downside to it, we have this discussion in our aural skills class a lot, between saying do da di versus 1 2 3 4 5 6, 1 2 3 4 5 6. It's that in compound meter, 1 and 4 are the strong beats, and compound meter, compound duple is 2 beats to a bar. But when you count 1 2 3 4 5 6, you know, every student says, oh, there's 6 beats. Like, no, there's 6 divisions. So that's the yeah, different ways of counting.
Yeah, I like the syllables like do to deity, but then there's no like beat 1 beat 2, right? So one, yeah, to deity,
that's
two,
that's the downside. Deity, right? Yeah. It only shows you the beat and the division of the beat. It's just an easy way to say the beat. So we can do counting. Do da di, do da di, do da di, or do da di, 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 do for 12/8 meter. And so that's one way to feel the bigger beat. Physical movement and conducting are powerful.
Yes. And maybe we can talk about why. Why are we counting? Because like you just showed, Mike, when you said those syllables and you were conducting, you were feeling, I could tell you were feeling the beat and the hierarchy and the pulse, like Brian was saying, but you weren't saying any numbers. So that's kind of my question is, do we need to count in order to get to like what we're actually doing? Like, can you feel and know the hierarchy and the order and the pulse and all this stuff without saying 1 and 2 and 3 and 4.
The importance for counting is because regardless of what you do, there's always a resolution of music and understanding, right? So even written music is at its core completely imperfect compared to, say, listening to a recording, because you can hear nuance that might not have been there, a feel change, a group change, something like that, right? And so when we're feeling it, or when we're directing it, or when we're saying it, like you'll hear like jazz musicians, you know, they'll scat to each other a rhythm, and you'll get a feel shift, or you'll get a swing change on that, and it's way more intuitive and exact than just saying normal counts. But that doesn't negate the need for understanding the underlying degree of rhythm. It's like doing geometry without showing any of your proofs, or it's the reason why our math teachers made us show our work, right? It's in a way, I can speak English without knowing what a noun, a verb, or an adverb is, but knowing that underlying information, especially as a musician, as someone who's teaching a musician, it the listener doesn't need to be able to count. And eventually your understanding, like I'm not thinking about, oh, that was a noun, that was a verb when I'm speaking right now, you know, but the understanding of that, I believe, is extremely important. I think that's the reason why we count, is we teach the meaning behind just the note. Like an count, like around 1E and if we're doing that, an count has a general feel of wanting to push forward, to where an E count, for example, is more like an echo and push and pulls back, right? And so that understanding and saying, oh, now unless we have that counting structure that all of us in this chat know, I couldn't have explained that to you right now. You know what I mean? So naming those things and teaching our students to be able to communicate those similar ideas to other musicians, I think that's the whole point at the end of the day.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm with you about that, the understanding of it and all that, but do we have to do it while we're playing it, or like reading it or learning the music out loud? You know, like here I'm playing, learning a piece, and I have to 1 E 2 and 3 4, or can I just play it and do it if I know the rhythm? And then, you know, if you asked me, oh, write in the little labels that we use, okay, fine, I can do that, right? So and it's like that with reading notes. Like, I have no idea what the letter names are when I'm sight reading music, right? There's no way. Like, there's a gazillion notes a second, but I can read it, I can play it instantly. I could stop and you could say, what are the notes right there? Oh, okay, well, that's an F sharp and a B. But when I'm playing it, I'm just, that's that, and that's this, and this is how it goes, right? And so I feel like it's the same with the rhythm, is if you can do the rhythm, why do we have to count it, right? Like, why do we need to count it?
So what you're saying actually leads me straight into a couple of like very similar anecdotes that all have to do with exactly what you're talking about. About a year ago, I had an adult student, an older lady named Wendy, who said to me one day, she played a piece for me out of her lesson book, and she played it correctly. And then she said to me after it was done, I was like, hey, like, how do you feel about that? Do you feel proud of yourself? And she was like, no. She's like, she said, Jordan, I've been taking lessons for a year and I still don't feel like I know how to read music. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, you've been taking lessons for a year, like how, and you just played it for me. And she was just like, well, she's like, yeah, I know how to play the notes at the right time and all that. But she's like, I just feel though, like I'm not really reading music. I feel like I'm faking it because I, you know, as I'm playing through it, I'm not like saying to myself, this note is F, this note is C, this note is A. And I realized that there was sort of like a misunderstanding a little bit somewhere in there, where to her, she thought that reading music was like reading a book in the way where it's like, you're only reading it if as you're playing, you're thinking to yourself the names of every note and chord as you play through the whole thing. And I had to clarify with her, well, hang on a second now, like that's not necessarily reading music. Like, you know, reading music is much bigger than just like, well, knowing exactly what the name of every individual note is, you know, because I mean, like if you have a ton, like a really fast passage of fast notes, real pianists aren't sitting there thinking to themselves, like running through the name of every note as they're going up it, right? Like that's not realistic. And in a way, the language of what is that letter name was getting in her way. It was hindering her experience because I teach, you know, intervallic reading and like, you know, not sitting there thinking through each of these individual things. And I think it's the exact same process that gets in a student's way when trying to count through rhythms, because they're so worried about trying to figure out, am I saying the right syllable at the right time, that it impedes whether or not they're even able to play the rhythm for what it actually is written out to be. Because I have other students too who are going through that same thing right now. Like typically when I introduce dotted quarter notes, you know, they count it and they're able to count slowly and play the rhythm correctly. But then if they want to play it at tempo, a little bit faster, unless their mouth can keep up at the speed of counting for as fast as their fingers are playing, and frequently they just can't, it ends up getting in the way again. And so it just feels a lot to me like language becomes a huge barrier to getting through some of these passages of music, because they're thinking so much about an extra step that shouldn't be necessary once you've learned what the process is.
So how do you teach them? Like, okay, we're talking, we're all musician trained right now and we know how to do it. But for a 4, 5, 6, 7 year old, how do you teach the subdivision if you don't ask them to count? It's just, to me, it's just, I tried it without the counting and I don't think rhythm, it's there if you don't count. And I've been teaching for over 20 years. So
I have thoughts, but I think Brian has thoughts too. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's hear them. Cause I'm like,
Okay. Yeah. So, the dotted quarter note is one of the quintessential questions all the time on all the places. I ever questioned the dotted quarter note. So the first problem with the dotted quarter note is that we teach quarter notes first. And so when we teach quarter note first, think about the brain. I'm big on neurobiology and stuff and how we think about stuff. Think about the brain. You basically told the brain that you're going to create two empty water glasses. Here's beat one, here's beat two, right? And then the brain takes the rhythm or the information that we're trying to read, and we pour water into those glasses, right? And so a student will see a symbol and then see another symbol, and you've taught them to pour the water here and then pour the water here, beat one, beat two, right? Okay. And so what ends up happening is then we get to this extra symbol over here. And the problem with this note, so many teachers try to teach the and, that the student should focus on the and. That's not what they should be focusing on. They should be focusing on the empty beat two. The feeling of the empty beat two is what gives you the ability to play the and, right? And so you have two choices. You either make, the first thing you practice is you practice feeling beat two like a loud silence, like that kind of feeling versus a kind of thing, right? So it's one and. And I know Clinton's done a lot of the movement-based rhythm structure stuff. I'm trying to remember what it's called. What is it called?
Eurythmics.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and a lot of that is based on movement. And if, unless you give the brain a job in that space that you've trained it to do, like you've got to make a movement or a tongue click or a breath or a feeling internally, they're going to miss that second eighth note every time. And so what counting really does is it gives them a job to do, number one. So it gives them a movement, gives them they can expand or expel the energy that they need to feel on B2. But you don't have to do that with counting. You just have to do that with a feeling. You have to teach them where that empty feeling is. Now, the second thing is, the two empty water glasses, the problem with that is there's only two of them. And now we're at the eighth note level. And so at the eighth note level with those two beats, there's actually four impulses. So you basically taught a student that a quarter note gets one impulse in their mind, when really now you've changed it without actually telling them that now a quarter note gets two impulses, right? And so a lot of teachers forget to teach at the micro beat level before they introduce those macro shifts. And that's what causes a lot of problems. So, okay, I think I've said enough. Someone else.
I want to build off of kind of what you're saying, though, because I don't disagree with really a lot of anything you're saying. And I think for me, I kind of liken it a little bit to the conversation that comes up a lot of among a lot of us teachers about like the difference between like teaching students sight versus sound, or vice versa, sound versus sight. And I want to clear up right from the beginning here that I do believe in teaching sight first, though I understand the benefits of teaching sound first. And I'm a firm believer that in teaching anything, there should be a healthy balance of like multiple approaches into things. It shouldn't just be like all one or the other. And so like, you know, when I'm teaching, you know, I do teach sight first in terms of learning how to read, you know, notes on a page. But then when it comes to understanding those rhythmic pulses, I've learned that sight doesn't really help very much in that case there. And instead, the sound should really come first when we start really breaking down rhythms into these subdivisions. So like when I first introduce eighth notes to some of my youngest children, most of them have already learned TT, the Tan TT system, in their local schools. And so, you know, I'll sit there and I'll tell them like, you know, technically we count this as one end, but they always say to me, oh, that's a TT. I've learned that before. And they already know what TT feels like. I don't have to teach them that, you know, we say it apple, because they don't have to memorize that. They already learned one system and they can feel that system. And if they can feel it, then I don't care what they call it. You know, what it comes down to is, are they doing the correct thing by feeling it and hearing it and replicating it? And then once they're able to do it, then they're able to, okay, let's attach that idea to this concept. And that's honestly how most like general music teachers at an elementary level, that's how they usually teach rhythm, is they teach it from that approach rather than, frankly, a backwards approach that a lot of us tend to teach from.
So how about the people that, not everybody's born with rhythm, right? So they don't feel it. What do you do with those?
Okay, so yeah, let me chime in, because what I'm about to say, I think answers your question, Val, plus relates to what Jordan and Brian were just saying. So I try not to do the sight first. So the Dalcroze Eurythmics thing, which is like a huge passion of mine and I love it, it's hearing it and listening first, then you experience it and feel it in your body, then you can replicate it yourself, then you read it and label it and write it later. So I used to think that was cheating. Like, wait, I'm just going to tell students how the music goes. Okay, so in other words, like, you might be thinking, oh, okay, so instead of having the student like read the music and understand the rhythm and count it and figure it out themselves, you're just going to tell them, oh, it goes like this, dun, 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 and, you know, and like teaching by rote. It's not really that. It's just that you want them to hear and experience things before, like to prepare them for the symbol and how it looks, so that when you show them, they relate it, which is exactly how we learn to speak language, right? You don't tell a little child, wait, you can't speak until you can read all the words first. Okay, that's ridiculous. We copy the sounds and we're speaking and making sentences long before we have any idea what that looks like and how to read it. So, for example, like I might have for the dotted quarter eighth, I might do an exercise where I play that rhythm pattern, like bum, 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 which is like deck the halls with, or London Bridge, or I might even sing a song, or I'll play something. I'll have the student echo the rhythm, or even better is move it through their body, stepping the rhythm, because you get the whole body, and then you can feel the elongated beat. And I don't even care if it's beat one or what we call it. So they're experiencing moving through space and feeling the time and the energy that it takes for the elongated dotted quarter, even though we haven't called it a dotted quarter and I haven't showed it to them. But they're feeling and hearing dum, bum, 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 bomb. And we might be like using a stretchy or something. And, oh, let's feel how long that is, right? Then, hey, let's improvise using that rhythm. So I'll have them play something on the piano. Do, 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 right? Then eventually, oh, here's what it looks like on the page. Or even better, maybe compare it to four quarter notes. So I might draw different things, four quarters, a couple eighths and a quarter or whatever, and then the actual pattern of dotted quarter, eighth, quarter, quarter, and maybe they can even guess, oh, that's the one we were doing. Then, you know, they play it again, et cetera, et cetera. Then in my experience, they're more likely to see that again in future and internalize it already and go, oh, that's bum, 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 which I'm sure all of you admit that's how you read rhythms probably that are easy for you, right? Is you just see the pattern, you go, oh, that's dun, 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 bum, 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 right? Now, if it's a difficult rhythm, then you might say, oh, now I have to count it to figure it out. Anyway, so that's sort of my long-winded thing. Did that answer your question, Val?
No, I'm still
No.
Shoot. Another question. No, I'm very passionate about this, and I tried not. I hated counted as a student myself, and when I start teaching, I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this. It took me 2 years to get back to it. And since I tried, I think, maybe like 7 or 8 years ago to quit the counting again, one more attempt. And then I was like, that's it. Now tell me, how do the students feel when they actually get to a difficult passage and they have no idea how to count or subdivide? So you're just wasting time of the lesson to teach how to count that segment, basically?
Usually by that point, they can figure it out. You know, like after they've seen lots of different patterns and experience, different combination of like eighths and quarters and maybe some sixteenths, right? Then usually they can just figure it out. Or yes, you can help them, but, and I'm not saying like you can't use syllables or anything, but it just maybe doesn't help. Like what we're really trying to get is to have them internalize the rhythm.
You know, I think that Val, you bring up a really important point that actually it strengthens kind of some of the arguments that, like, you know, I feel like I've been making here about this, is that most students of all ages, children, adults, doesn't matter, they all resist counting. They don't want to do it. They hate doing it. Okay. And there's nothing that I can do or say to make them love that process. Okay. And so what I've learned is that, like, to me, forcing them to count when they're unwilling to means that they're unwilling to take that information in. They're unwilling to even give it a shot. They're only doing it because my teacher is the person in charge of this space and is making me do it, but I'm not putting any stock into it because they don't want to learn that way. And so I've learned that what that essentially turns into is me rolling the boulder up the hill against everyone's will. And it just kind of makes everyone's experience worse. It makes my experience worse. It makes their experience worse. And I feel like I end up in that situation. I am now wasting time in that lesson time trying to work myself uphill.
All my students count out loud and they love it. They really love it. But they know that's not something that can negotiate on it. They have times when they don't want to do it, and I close an eye and an ear, and I'm okay with it. But, and we have a rhythm book that they have to fulfill from the first page to the last one. They have to get up to 200 on a metronome with the speed, counting out loud, and that's not negotiable. So, but I never had any of the issues. That's part of our lessons. It starts from, as soon as we learn the notes, we learn the counting as well and the clapping, and we do dances. We do all kind of 3 to 5 minutes out of our lesson goes towards the rhythm. And that's it. And we like it.
But you know what, though? I will say this, though, is that this was actually a question that just came up recently in the Facebook group, in fact. But most of the time I've learned that students are going to take whatever it is you're trying to give them once they are ready to accept that piece of information. Now, whether or not they're ready to accept it because you're a musical tyrant of your studio and you must do this, not really. But like, that is one way that you could do it. However, someone just recently asked in the group, they said, how can you get your students to start singing more of the music that's in front of them? So many of my students resist the concept of singing. And I think it's the same thing. It's that, like, if they're not ready to sing in their lesson, to sing what's on the page, then don't force them to. You know, eventually most of my students tend to come around to it only because I end up modeling for them. Now, this brings me back around to, how do they learn the counts and how are they exposed to it when I teach them? I expose it to it. I have no problem counting out loud for them, because I'm not sitting there trying to keep track of finger numbers and hand positions and technical skills that I'm trying to do, plus the rhythm, plus the pitch. Like, for me, I'm not like, you know, sitting there like, you know, with the meme of the lady who trying to figure out all of the math symbols all around her head. I'm not like, I'm not going to put my students through that. So instead, I'll sit there, I'll count out loud for them and help guide them as they go through it. And as they get more and more exposed to me showing them how this fits together, they start making all of the connections and clicking things together. And then typically by the time that they get around, this might feel like a long time, but for me, by the time they get around to like the end of level one, or level two in a method series, usually around that time, they kind of become way less resistant towards the idea of counting because they're starting to really see how all of the pieces fit together. And they have so much experience with all of the other complicated parts of playing music that there's just not the resistance that there was anymore. And now they're willing to start kind of actually giving it a try themselves.
I'm loving this, by the way. It's like extremely stimulating and I would hardly rather be doing anything else in the world. So thank you guys. There's a couple people that made comments that I want to read, but I'm going to play a short clip from Jeff Millis, who wanted to join us but couldn't. And he just had like a little comment. So we'll hear from him.
Counting out loud. That was the debate that really inspired the whole thing, right? Should we count or should we not? And I always find it funny when people, you know, post or in any debate and, you know, someone will say something like, counting out loud, it works. And then other people are like, it doesn't work. And it's like, how could you have such, you know, like diametrically opposed viewpoints in the same group? I suspect, I don't know what you think, but I suspect that people come into these conversations not realizing that they're using two completely different definitions and maybe two different sets of goals. And so coming from two completely different places, you know, nobody is really taking the time to define what do you mean when you say it works or it doesn't work. Counting works for what exactly? Or counting doesn't work doesn't work for what exactly? Because I don't think that we're talking about the same exact thing.
Okay, so that's, we kind of talked about that already, but I like how he said, you know, that we needed to define what we're talking about. But let me go to this other clip now.
Okay, I'd love to touch on that later.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
Okay, so I wanted to say this earlier, but so counting, if since I'm here at the piano, if you don't mind, counting, you can very easily go one and two and three and four and one and two, right? And those counts are actually not wrong. Those counts are wrong. I'm saying exactly what I'm supposed to do, right? So this is what I was talking about earlier about that there's three different things about rhythm. And I think when a lot of people say counting doesn't work, they're trying to get rhythm just to work. Like once I get the student to count, they're going to have rhythm. That's not the way it works, right? Counting is about order. It's about understanding what that order is of those notes. But that's completely separate from pulse. Like even you have students that say, I counted, but I didn't use the metronome. Or I used the metronome this week, so I didn't have to count. And it's like, no, those two things are vastly different ideas of the mind and thought process. And so, like, you know, he's talking about people, some people say don't count and you count. Counting is not the end all be all. It's not the thing that's going to make all the rhythm better. It's just a tool to help students on that one particular part of understanding what's happening in the music.
Yeah, okay, that's good. That's actually related to, that's similar to what he says in the next clip. So let me play that.
It's completely possible to count out loud and yet have an atrociously non-steady beat. You know, if you're counting one and two and three and you're playing like that, yeah, you might be counting correctly, but the beat is not steady and the musicality is just not there. And so counting is not a magic bullet, absolutely, that achieves a steady beat. And if someone tries to say that it is, you say, no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for that. If I were to say counting works, I would finish that sentence by saying counting works for helping students understand mentally. It's not really like a feeling thing or a musicality thing. It's purely academic. It's intellectual, but it's to help students understand where are we in this music, in this measure, in this piece, you know, in this, you know, because I can feel music innately. I could get up and dance when you turn on a piece of music, and a student can, you know, they could get up and dance, but without being trained, do they necessarily know that that one cool little motif that keeps repeating, it always starts on beat number three, for instance. Do they know that? No, they don't. They can feel the beat, but without counting and learning to count measures and beats and all of that, they don't know that we're always, for instance, coming in on three right here. They don't necessarily understand how to take apart really complex syncopation and make sure that notes are placed exactly where we want them in a measure. To me, counting is all about location. It's about locating where is this note supposed to happen in the measure.
Okay, so that's similar to what Brian was saying earlier, and maybe most people agree, and I agree too. Yeah, that's my whole thing too, is that can you perform the rhythm, know the rhythm, understand the place in the measure, feel it, do it musically, all that stuff without counting? And I think the answer is yes, and it may even be more helpful. But it's fine to like have a label like, oh, okay, that's beat three, right? So like when he said, oh, I don't know that it keeps coming in on beat three because I didn't count it or whatever. But you can still feel that, right? Dun, 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 bah, bah, or like there's an accent on beat three or something, whatever you call it. The main question is, do we have to count numbers out loud while we're playing it in order to understand all that and do that? Or if we can do it without counting, can't I just not count? Right? So thoughts on that?
Well, I wanted to just say that, like, I feel like what he was in his clip, what he was trying to describe is like to understand what rhythmic theory is different than trying to perform a rhythm, you know. And I teach my own students, you know, like, you know, sure, here's beat one, beat two, beat three, beat four. That way, you know, I can say we're going to start on beat three, or this happens on beat three. They at least know what I'm talking about, even though I'm not requiring them to perform the rhythm live for me. But I think, though, too, this also circles back to something that Mike said a while ago that makes you be suddenly my favorite person in the world. It comes to talking about how do we talk about the difference with how we count rhythms when we start talking about like compound duple time. Because like I used to work in a high school, a pretty large high school, and I found out that I was in the minority in terms of how many beats are in 6/8. I said there are two beats in 6/8, and everyone in the room was glaring at me why. What school did you go to that taught you there's two beats in a measure of 6/8? And like I was there trying to explain, well, no, like it's compound duple time. What does duple mean? It doesn't mean six, like it means two. And trying to explain that, like it was wild how no one agreed with me. And it was something over so fundamental over like, well, how do you count this rhythm? Is it more important to sit there and verbalize 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? Or is it more important just to feel the duple pulse that you get in there, right? One and a two and a one. Like what does it matter what, you know, a syllable we put to it, depending on the context of what we're trying to accomplish? If we're trying to perform it, I don't think it really matters. But if we're trying to talk about it and talk about like, how some beats are stronger than others, and a student is ready for that conversation, which I don't think they're ready for that conversation at an early stage. But, you know, after a couple of years of kind of going through some things and depending on how much they pick up on this rhythmic concepts, I love to go into it and talk about just, you know, some of these deeper things about like the difference between some of these time signatures and how the rhythm breaks down.
Yeah.
Here, I feel like it's a mixture of rhythm with pulse with continuity. We're covering three different things that are completely separate, and I think all of them are in the same genre, yet requires different attention. And it's I'm very strong. How about the benefits we get from counting out loud? Recent studies show that. Talking out loud, singing out loud, counting out loud while doing other things, especially in piano development, it's a brain development activity. So I tell my students, I don't want them to be piano teachers because it's a tough job and it's not really well paid in most cases. And it's a lot of work, especially for the college professor, paperwork, performances, studies, research, that, recruiting. I want them to be what they want to be, but I know the benefits the instrument bring to it. In counting, it is proven that is very beneficial. Why depriving the children in their development from an simple exercise that can be thought easily and it helps them develop? Why?
Yeah, well, I agree that even for myself, I can tell if I'm playing something and then I have to count numbers or I have to assign something, some words to it or do something, that it's, you know, a little bit of a challenge and it's good for the brain to do all that. But, you know, the question is, do I have to do it in order to know the music or play the rhythm or know the rhythm? And I don't think I do. But I agree, like, it can be helpful to, you know, engage different parts of the brain. We can do that in a number of different ways. Let me get to some of the comments that people said on in the chat before we wrap up. Okay, so this one is from Michael at Tennessee Music Academy. For those who require counting, how important is inner hearing to you, and how does counting support that? Should students hear inside before they see something? Mike, would you like to say something since you're nodding?
Yeah, doesn't Gordon call it audiation? That ability to hear pitch and hear rhythm in your mind. When I ask students to sight read, I ask them, you know, scan it first. Look at those symbols, hear that in your head. I think it all just has to come internally. A metronome does not give you rhythm. It's some sort of external thing. You have to feel rhythm. We have a heartbeat that beats at a regular interval, and we can divide that in certain ways. We can walk in a steady beat. I think rhythm has to start internally.
I would argue, though, that you can't have the inner hearing until you've connected with that movement. I've had a couple of, especially adult students, who come to me after they've lived 60 years and they've never been able to dance on the beat and they've never been able to feel the beat. And they really struggle with that. And so I do movement stuff first and dealing with that. And I set the metronome, I have them walk around the room and figure out what their speed of walking is first, because that's their default like speed. And so we'll play everything for a couple of weeks at that speed only, and that's it. And then we'll branch off from there. But they actually don't have the ability to inner hear the pulse because they don't have an internal constant pulse. So I think to a certain degree, the metronome does help with that. It does help them correct themselves and kind of hear when they're off or whatnot. But I understand what you mean about, like, once you get to a point where you don't need the metronome anymore, then that makes sense. But like, there are people, and especially young students, who need that kind of guidance of, this is where the even pulse needs to be. You know?
Yes, and I can help, I think, the metronome. I do have one student right now. He has no idea if he is staying with the metronome or not. So just blasting the little ticking thing with the red light in his face and saying, do it. No, you're not doing it. No, you're not doing it. Listen to the metronome. That does not work, right? And so I am approaching that from the Eurythmics philosophy. Brian, I think you would really love to study more of that. And so we're just dealing with him feeling a steady beat in his body and playing a steady beat and then being able to hear a steady beat and match it or not match it. Okay, let's go to the next comment because we only have a couple minutes. KTMOP, whoever you are, says, I try to practice counting with a student with a metronome, our drummer. Okay, it's a very boring drummer, but makes it a little easier. But what's difficult is having to deal with different systems, one hand versus ta. Yeah, okay, interesting. They also said, I stopped teaching with ta and tees because as an orchestra player, the conductor usually counts 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes. Now a conductor, yeah, conducting, so you're just watching the visual. Does it even matter if you're thinking 1, 2, 3, 4 or you know, whatever. It's here's the downbeat. And then they also said, yes, I feel the beat musically and that works most of the time, but when you have to sit and sight read, not being able to count becomes a disadvantage, especially in a group with different parts. Okay, I disagree because I've accompanied a lot, and if I can read the music, if I can play it, I don't have to count it. So, okay, a choir member might be thinking 1, 2, 3, 4, and I'm just thinking, bum, ba, da, da, do, 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 do. This is how it goes. So, yeah, again, I'm still trying to figure out how counting could help me because I don't need the help. So I guess that's the main question is, like, when we're trying to like teach a rhythm or get a student to know a rhythm or play a rhythm, then you're like, oh, you're not getting it. Count it, right? But we all know, like, it doesn't necessarily help. In fact, sometimes it makes it harder because now you're trying to count numbers out and syllables out loud while you're trying to play it, right? So you might simplify it by, okay, tap it. Don't worry about playing the right fingers, but can you do one, two, and et cetera? But my whole point is, and my opinion, which is the piano sensei way, which is tongue in cheek that mine's the best way, but it is that it doesn't necessarily help. And in fact, it makes it worse. But I still think you can feel and have a sense of everything, you know, downbeat or anacrusis, whatever you want to call it, right? We got anacrusis, crusis, metacrusis, feeling all that, knowing how all the music goes. Okay, we need to wrap up. The time flew by. Any final thoughts before we go?
I don't know about final thoughts. I'm not sure that, like, I was on necessarily like a wrap it all up thought, but I was going to say that I agreed with one of the comments just about kind of talking about, like, in terms of how, when do you approach, you know, counting and how do you fit it in? You know, like, for me personally, I think, honestly, actually, this is kind of a good wrap up comment, is that, like, for me, I will teach counting with some kind of movement, right? Even if the movement is just as simple as, you know, clapping or tapping a rhythm and counting out loud, I do use that when introducing a new rhythm that a student's never had before. It just becomes, in my opinion, too much to try and keep track of when you're leaving simply just the choreography of moving your body a certain way. And now you also have to think about this hand plus this hand playing these pitches at this time with a rhythm in this position with these finger numbers while keeping my fingers curved. Oh, also it wants me to play mezzo forte with a crescendo here. At that point, it becomes too much. And at that point, it's getting in the way. And at that point, something has to be removed. And if they can do it without the pitch, then we're taking the step of going from the body choreography and putting it onto the piano, but removing the verbal language coming out of our mouths. And I think that's the big dividing point between these two things.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that. Anybody else? Val, did you have any final thought?
Yeah, I recently judged the federation, the senior level in the federation, and I literally cried for a couple of minutes in the car because I could tell the students that didn't got a good rating was due to the fact that they weren't taught properly how to count. And that just breaks my heart because it's a student that can play a Chopin or a Schumann piece should not be in that position. So I encourage all teachers to teach properly how to count because we're depriving students from benefits to the brain in their development, especially young teachers who are teaching young students. So that's my final thought. And I firmly believe, and I have multiple articles that if you guys want to read and dive in, that reinforces what I'm saying right now. Counting out loud is very, very beneficial, not just as a musician, but for brain development. So I think just by looking at us tonight or this afternoon, you guys are negative towards it. And it's like, oh, why putting that through that much trouble? And you're creating a problem that's not actually a problem. It's just like teaching the notes. Can you play music without learning the notes? No. And rhythm, it's pretty much there as well. So that's my final thoughts on it.
Thank you, Val. Yeah, I know you said, like, we're all thinking of negative. I know several people here were saying they were talking about counting being helpful and all that. Yeah, we're just discussing different ways. But
It feels a little bit like it's adding extra work. That's what I meant with the negativity. Not that you guys, I know you guys know deep down that you have to count. And by counting out loud for this, especially when they're at home practicing, it's their way of knowing if they're doing the right or the wrong thing. Because counting in your head, we're not counting in your head.
Usually I don't believe that. I don't think that it's extra work. I think that it's important to audiate and also to create a language aspect to what rhythm can be. But also, most importantly, it gives us as musicians a common language to a certain degree of how we explain, and we can relate to those things really quickly. Like obviously that's counting without like saying it out loud. But my biggest point with counting is actually when you're not playing, when you're not creating a sound in the music, it's helpful to like give the body a job to do anyway. On like a, if I'm, you know, we're talking about the dotted quarter, but one and two. But feeling that beat two, one, two, and like knowing, give myself a that feeling inside. And so as a teacher, it's difficult to know if a student is actually feeling something there if they're all doing it in their head. So from a learning perspective or a teaching tool, it's also really helpful there. I think it expedites a lot of understanding mistakes and the way that the human mind is working with the student.
Okay, well, thanks for that, Brian. I'll take that as your final thoughts. And Mike, do you want to say anything else?
I have so many thoughts, and we're out of time. So all I'm going to say is I'm not sure that we're all talking about something that different. I think every one of us wants a physical activity to happen when students are playing, whether it's speaking or moving a body part or moving around the room or whatever. I think we all are tying the symbols to some sort of action. And it may, you know, the little detail of whether you're counting numbers or speaking doodaddy or some other type of movement. I don't know that it's that different, just different, I don't know, different styles of approaching it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Just a reminder, everyone, pianosenseiway.com and same name on YouTube. Thank you guys for doing this. I think it's really helpful to hear different opinions, to talk about it. We don't want to just be with people that always agree with us 100%. So I love that. I think it makes us stronger and smarter individually and as a teaching community group to hear different opinions and all that. So I really appreciate every single one of you. Thank you very much and have a great day. Take care.